guys. It's Quenet of Kwa City, and you all are welcome to this great episode. Yeah, it's nice having you guys here. Oh, man. This is me. We're here, and we are Kwa. My dear, I just did my nails, and these angels are looking pretty well. Yeah. If you're just listening to us for the first time, this is Kwa City, Nigerian first LGBTIQ lifestyle-based podcast, and we're available on everywhere you listen to your podcast. Public radio, Podburn, Anchor, SoundCloud, iTunes, Radio Public, Castbox, anywhere. My dear, we are there. That's great. Moving on this week, yes. Last week, Tears had a Human Rights, Sexuality and Law Symposium, and it was awesome, beautiful, and nice. You know, it's one of those things I feel we need in this community every now and then, a form of reorientation and redirection of focus, you know, true gathering of like minds and moving our community forward. You know, the symposium covered largely sexual health, human rights, representation of queer persons in arts, misconception and misunderstanding of the underrepresented community in the LGBTQ community, talking about the trans and the intersex community rights. You know, there was this reorientation that actually questioned my knowledge. Actually, it did question my own knowledge, you know, at the point, especially when the panelist asked, who isn't an intersex here in this room? And I was like, dude, am I an intersex person? You know, and she broke it down and everything, and it was worth the tea. Oh, great. On this episode today, guys, we're having a queer story. We met and we spoke with a queer Nigerian man called Ola, and he shared a story with us. You know, his story actually was a somewhat heartbreaking one, and it has a little taste of triumph. It's actually a story of child abuse, abusive relationship, homelessness, vulnerability. You know, I won't have to spill the whole of the tea. Just immediately after this break, you guys get to listen to Larry Waju tell a story. This is Kwa City, where your mama warned you about. We're queer here, we're LGBT here. This is Kwa City, where your mama warned you about. We're queer here, we're LGBT here.
My name is Alan Waju. I'm 23 years old. I was born April 12, 1995. I'm the last son of 24 kids. It's a polygamous family. My dad actually got married to my 7 wives, and my mom is the 6th wife. I'm a gay man living in Nigeria. I'm always this kind of boy. Everybody really loves me when I was younger. At the age of 4 years old, I was abused by my mom. My mom's nephew, he actually forced me to give him a blowjob, and he took advantage of me. In return, he actually gave me money, which I think I was a little younger to understand what was going on. But I felt abused, and those memories stay on to me till date. Growing up, I found out that I'm always this kind of guy. Like, I love getting into competition with my sisters. Like, anything they wear, I love wearing it too. Like, I'm not the sissy type or the effeminate type, but I think I love just putting my mom clothes. Gele, Agele hair tie. I love wearing my mom's hair tie. I know, I love doing all sorts of things my mom does, like the way she dance, the way she talk to people, you understand? Oh, she's actually my muse. Like everything everything about me, I can say, or the 100% attributes about me is mostly what I got from my mom. And you know, like I told you, I said I always get in competition. I love to get into competition with my sisters. And in which, in this case, my sister are this kind of girls that, you know, guys are always all around them, front, back, center. So I always had this dream like, wow, I know someday I'm gonna be this kind of person whereby, you know, guys will come this and that. Though I never know anything about my sexuality then, but I always had this dream like, yeah, I'm gonna be somebody the guys will always come for. It's like, so when my mom had stroke, then we have to relocate from Lagos to Ibadan. That's where I started another phase of my life. That's where I had to stay with my sisters. They, you know, they actually sent me to secondary school. And when I was 13 or 14 years old, there's this man that I actually noticed that stays in opposite my sister's house. This man is this kind of person that he loves abhorring kids. He loves kids all around him. So I didn't even know what's going on. So I think the man always had a thing for me. I was young then, but the man always told my sister's son that he likes the way I look, the way I talk, my brain. He told my sister's son that I'm this kind of intelligent guy that he loves to be my friend. And my sister's son actually sold me out in a way that he actually, took me out to, you know, get close to this man. So I got close to this man. We started talking, chit-chatting. I never knew the man actually had something for kids. I never knew he was a pedophile. I mean, it was later found out that this man has, you know, had, like, he makes young boys lick his pennies, his manhood. So the man actually forced me into giving a blowjob again. I mean, at that point, I knew I had something. I gave the man a blowjob, and that was the first time I actually realized that I think I'm not sane. Like, I think I'm committing a big sin. Like, I think I'll go to hell if I continue doing this. Although I went to bed crying because I felt at that moment I knew that I was abused, I was taken advantage of. So I cried my eyes out. I cried my eyes out and I prayed to God that God should change me, that I don't want this kind of life. I don't want this kind of life. Yeah, I was with my sister, I was living with my sister, and she was practicing Islam. So I had to go to mosque. You understand me? I go to mosque, I did ablution, I prayed to God, like, God, I even did night vigil. Like, God, I want you to change me. I don't want this kind of life for myself. You understand me? But things never change. Instead, it's even increased. Like, I had this thing for guys. Like, I just always want to see them bath in mood. I just want to see their backside. I want to see their manhood. It never changed. I can remember then growing up, well, I was in SS2 then. I think I was 15 or 16. Yeah, 15 years old. Yeah, there's this neighbor of mine. I mean, a cute, handsome man in his late 30s, I think. He wakes up around 5 a.m. to, you know, bath, take his bath and go to work. So immediately I notice he opens his door. I'm this kind of guy, like, pew, I wake up, to go check him out, to see, like, there's a way I peeped through the bathroom door to see him. I mean, this is the man I've always had fantasy to have my first sex with. So I grew up with those feelings, and when it was time for me to have a girlfriend, I actually had one girlfriend. I mean, I actually tried to, you know, behave normal like people. I mean, the feelings were, not really like feelings, but I just had to play along, you understand. And I really, really appreciate the girl. I think the girl actually know that this is not going anywhere. So the girl actually cut ties with me. Although we're still friends though, but not, I mean, we don't have anything like a relationship at all. And we never had anything like that. So 2015 came, 2011 came, I graduated from secondary school. I have to move back to Lagos because my mom is not back in Lagos. She's in a house at Ayobo. So I had to move back to my mom's house. And I think a few months later, one of my sister that stays in Abuja actually called me over to come and stay with her. Yeah, she just got a job at Accountant General, I think Federal Ministry of Finance then. So before she got the job, she's this lady that she's into canteen. Like, she has a canteen. She sells local dialect food, you understand, for people. And she knows I'm a good cook. So she actually invited me over to come stay with her. So I stayed with her. I mean, it was a very, very bad experience because she actually lied to my mom that she wants me to come over to continue my schooling. You know, being she is my blood sister, and my mom trusted her, so my mom allowed me to go. And getting there, she know it was not the same thing she promised. You know, she never fulfilled her promise. So instead, I was more like an houseboy. So at the long errand, doing my houseboy chores and all that, I met my first boyfriend, whose name is Oliver. I was 17 years old then, and he was 35. But when I clocked 18, I actually had my first sex with him. And it wasn't bad though, although it was kind of quite painful, but it wasn't a bad sex because it was my first love. And I was 18 years old then. So, well, it helped me grow. It was not all about the sex. It was all about motivating me. I can remember the night I told him that I'm going back to Lagos because my sister didn't fulfill her promises of everything she told me she wants to help me with at Abuja. He couldn't take it. He cried because he had dreams. He actually opened up because he had a lot of dreams for me. He wanted to enroll me to a computer school. To cut the story short, I mean, that's how we cut the communication. We broke the boy that was being assaulted by some guys because he's effeminate or something like that. You understand me? And for him to have been beaten to that extent because of the way he behaves, I felt like it was unfair. So I interfered. And these guys were like, "Chill, bro. What's up with you? I mean, you're not the one we're tackling." And I'm like, "Oh, yeah, I know, but this is a human being too. You just can't treat him because he behaves like this. I mean, you should have loved him, you should have showed him a little care. Better still, you should have just be silent on this issue and don't say anything. You shouldn't have attacked him." And the guys came at me like, "Yo, do you want to fight for him?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm not fighting, but all I'm just saying is this is wrong." And, you know, I actually bailed the guy out, but they actually promised to deal with me. And that was when the incident actually happened. And I think 2015. Yeah, I was attacked by some guys. I was beaten. I mean, it was actually two of them. I mean, I could stand two of them. I was fighting. I was trying to, you know, before I knew it, they doubled, like, five people on me, and I got stabbed in my right arm. close to my elbow twice. I mean, I bleeded just because I stood up for somebody, you know, somebody that was being treated badly, somebody like me. Because at the point, I remember they asked me like, yo, what's up with you? Are you part of them? And I said, yeah, if I'm part of them, is that a crime? I mean, it's no offense. These are people, they're human beings like me. You don't have to treat them this way. So, I mean, this car actually gave me the muse, gave me the inspiration I need to fight, to come out clean to some people. I can remember the first person I actually came out to was my best friend in Abuja. That was Malumi. I mean, he's going through. I mean, he's engaged to his fiancée and soon to be married. But my point is, when I saw him, he was the first guy I saw, like, was open. Was the sissy type, like, he never cared. He was always on his Mary Kay, his eyebrows and everything. Like, his eyelashes, rather. Like, bro, how do you do this? It's like, I mean, I don't give a fuck. I don't beg people for money. I work for my own money. So it's pretty hard for people to dictate the way I live my life. And I told him, like, does your parents know about me? He said, yeah, his parents know about me, especially his mom. And his mom actually accepted him. But his dad still feels threatened by his sexuality. But we thank God today, his dad is coming to terms with him. Like, the dad has already accepted it. So I actually walked up to Bellamy. I'm like, oh, yo, bro. When I was in Abuja, there was this guy I was seeing. Like, seeing him in a way. I said, we're kind of dating. And he said, oh, bro, you're gay. I'm saying, no, I'm not. I think I'm, you know, it's just I'm trying to explore my sexuality. He said, okay, no problem. But he said, do you? I said, yeah, I love this, boy. I love this guy. He said, yeah, bro, you're gay. Like, you're gay. The gay. In the long run, I met my second boyfriend, who is also in his 30s too. And, you know, he saw that spirit in me. And he actually, you know, he fell in love. But I never knew that it was just a Satan in disguise. I don't even know how to say this, but he came to my life to ruin more things. Yeah, there's a sweeter part of the relationship. We loved each other equally, we respected each other, but it was an abusive relationship that he had to, you know, most times I just have to endure the torture mentally. Understand me? I can remember there was a day he slapped me. I mean, he had done that like twice or thrice. But because, you know, I love this person, I can't raise my voice, I think, because this is love. I never wanted to leave because I'm scared of being single again. So I had to go with the flow, which I regretted. And along the line, you know, it was like, I told him my plans. I wanted to travel out of the country. I want to do this. I want to do that. And, you know, I mean, he told me what was my plan. I showed him the money I have in my account, which was close to 300K. So that was how he started, you know, he started bringing stories up, like, you know, somebody that stays in abroad that can help us, that can do this, that can do that, that can do this, that can do that. And before I know it, I started dipping my hands into my bank account, you know, giving him, thinking he's doing the processing, he's doing the visa processing or this or that. But I never knew he was just, you know, scamming me. Instead, he was doing his own processing. Yeah, he was doing his own processing. And along the long run, he actually, you know, the visa was denied. And that was where he opened up to me that he was actually trying to find a way to go first. So when he gets there, he will find a way to bring me in. That means he played me for a fool. So that's that. We literally had to break up. It was a good story, but just had a bad ending. And I can remember that he gave me a car, like one of his cars to cruising and this and that. I don't even know, but I had to return the car. I had to return every gift he gave me because I just felt like I need to move on. And during that period, he was still begging me. So I was still, you know, I was kind of reconsidering the relationship. Like, okay, I can still give it a second chance. It was during that period, I lost my mom. But before before I talk about that part, I can remember there was a time my mom, you know, my mom actually called me and asked me that, what's wrong with me? Am I impotent? Like, she doesn't see any guy, like, she doesn't see any girl that come around. Like, and she has tried to, you know, hook me up with two girls. Like, I'm always this kind of person, like, I love just being friend and not anything. So she told me to strip myself naked. I can remember I was 19 years old then. So I stripped myself naked. She saw my dick. And she was like, oh, Shokobona, you're not important. So what's wrong? You know, Shelly. There, I opened up, like, I said, I'm not attracted to girls. She said, what do I mean? I said, that's all I can say for now. I think she didn't get she didn't get the message I passed, but, you know, we just joked over it. I mean, we closed the chapter. So, there was a day I was with my boyfriend, and I felt like, this second boyfriend, I felt like, I've been hiding this guy for a lot of people. Let me just come out clean to my mom and tell her this. So I called my mom that day and I explained to her that I'm actually seeing a guy. I'm not seeing a guy, actually dating a guy. I'm just like, whoever that one here, can you come? I'm like, mom, please, you know, since you've given birth to me, I've never asked you for anything before. Please, I'm asking you for this. I'm not begging you to pity me or something. I'm asking you for acceptance, please, mommy. This is me. I've tried to change, but it's not working for me. And she was like, okay, that we need to see, we need to talk. Okay, I'm saying, no problem. And we actually talked, and you know, even mothers now, the way they act, she was angry, she was mad, she was this, she was that. But she later, you know, she called me, my son, are you okay? Are you happy being this? And I said, mommy, I've never seen, like, peace. But I found peace when I actually accepted myself. I found peace when I actually said, like, okay, you know, to all my best friends, Balumi, Samuel, and Kenny. And Samuel was this kind of person, like, Samuel is like my blood brother. He's more like a friend to me. So Samuel said no problem, that he had always knew right from time, like, because not like I don't even know, maybe someone is bisexual, but there's a way we do things then growing up, like the way I love sleeping on his back, the way he loves sleeping on my back, you know, the way he loves making, you know, the way I love using his booty as a pillow, stuff like that. You know, he said, you know, he knew, but he was just looking for a way to confirm the story, and which he confirmed, and he's happy for me. I was expecting someone is a son of a pastor. I was expecting someone to be judgmental, my dear, but someone was just there, trying to make his best friend happy, trying to make his best friend look important. I put Kenny too. Kenny had her own challenges. You know, she didn't accept me at first, but later she, you know, got over it, and we never talked about it, but that's that. I don't want to go on our own issue. So, when my mom, back to my story, when my mom actually died, you know, we had to cut ties, because I caught him cheating. He couldn't get over his ex. He couldn't get over his ex, and I found him, you know, find him saving his ex pictures on his phone, you know, deleting texts and all that. So I feel like, you know what, it's time for me to move on, you know, and get a life. So at that point, I was homeless because I was living with him. And he just, you know, he actually told me that he can't renew the rent in Lagos. That if I want to live with him, I have to come all the way from Lagos to Enugu and start living with him. And I'm this kind of guy, like, I said, my whole life is in Lagos. I can't because I'm perfect. I mean, I love you, but you're still cheating on me. What's the guarantee, like, if I move over there, like, I'll be able to do, you know, what I want. I'll be able to go to school, get a job, this and that. So, instead, we actually go our separate ways. So, I was homeless I was sleeping in the church then. So I remember I called Samuel. Samuel never knew what I was going to. So I called Samuel. I told Samuel, like, Samuel, I'm living in the church. And Samuel told me, like, Ami, you're from a well-to-do family. Your father is okay. Your father has have houses. What's wrong? And I told him that my is a polygamous family. And I know, you know, I'm from a polygamous family. And it's not easy for me being there. Especially when, you know, people are talking about my sexuality. I've lived in my father's house for, let me say, a year. And I see my brothers gossiping about, you know, me not bringing girls to the house. And doing all sort of things they do together. But that's not the point. The point is I can't live there because I'm kind of scared of my life too. Because I'm my dad's favorite. My dad actually loves me more out of all his sons. Because I think I'm the favorite. Yeah, I'm the favorite. There was a time I was trying to use me as the next of kin. So I'm kind of scared of my life. So I had to leave the house. I start sleeping in the church. So I told Samuel all this story. And Samuel actually told me to come stay with him at his school. Lasso. So I started living in Samuel's hostel. You understand me? His brother never knew. Samuel has, but the brother never knew I was staying with him in his hostel. So whenever I leave school, before I go home, I go to Samuel's house. You know, I go there to, you know, just play for a day or two. So the family knows me. All of his brother, his dad, they knows me very well. So when I was homeless, I had to, you know, Samuel had to take me in. And when the Samuel rent expired, we got to find out that Samuel's brother have an apartment in Lagos and he doesn't stay there. So he actually took me in. So me and Samuel we actually moved into his brother's apartment. And there comes depression. I was depressed because I wasn't getting love from anybody. The only person that cared about me was Samuel. You know, I was broke, I was depressed. Samuel, the only way Samuel, you know, Samuel is a student and he could only help me the little he can. And his brothers too are trying their best to help me too. So, at this long run, I felt like, you know what? I don't think it's only me that I'm a gay man in this community, like in this whole world. I've read story, you know, I can remember me watching a lot of, I think, movies. I mean, like, let me find somebody to reach out to. Boom. Then I remembered me, like, I had flashback of me watching a guy coming out on TV, NTA, morning, whatever, with Fumi Yonda. That was basically me. I mean, I was inspired by the way this guy was talking about his sexuality. So, like, basically me. So I reached out on Facebook. I searched him, basically me. I saw him. I messaged him and boom, he replied. So we talked. Like I told him about what I was going through. He said, that in what way can he help me? And I told him that, sir, I think this country is not willing accepting my secret. Please, is there a way you can help me? So he actually told me that there's no, like for now, like he didn't leave Nigeria because of his sexuality. You understand? That's what, I mean, he actually said, that, oh, I can't recollect the message, but I think he actually said, do I want to leave Nigeria because of my sexuality, or do I want to escape Nigeria? I don't even know, but what he was trying to tell me that, okay, do you think if you leave Nigeria, the problem will not still be there? So, I felt like, okay, sir, advise me on what to do. And he actually told me that, have I heard about tears? I said, no. He said, okay. So, he introduced me to tears. The initiative of equal rights at Lekki. So I went to the TS. There I got to meet my families, my gay brothers and lesbian sisters, and which I never had regret. And at the long run, I got to meet Mr. Macontrola. You understand? And I explained things to Mr. Macontrola. I mean, these people have been supportive to my story. They've actually helped me one way or the other. They can. And I know my dad is late too because my dad actually died a month after my mom died. But I never had the opportunity to come out to him because I know my dad is a disciplinarian. He might hate me for that because my dad is an Air Force and my mom is an Army. But it's, you know, I think the motherly love is different from the fatherly love. So I think my mom could understand better from the point I was coming from. She just made me promise that I would give her kids. And I said, I mean, as a gay man, you can reproduce. That doesn't mean you can reproduce. Yeah, you can reproduce through surrogacy. And I promise to give you kids that will look like you. So, and that's that. Life is not easier down here. But life doesn't get easier, my dear. You get stronger. I mean, Samo family that I stay with now, they've been seeing most of my posts on Instagram, and there was one I actually posted. I said, I'm gonna be breaking out of this closet soon. That there's a lot of hate in there, and Samuel's elder brother, fiancé, actually messaged me and asked me maybe I'm trying to come out being gay. You know, I was scared to tell them because I don't know, because these people, these people pronounce a lot of homophobic words towards me. Like, not towards me, towards people like me. And it's just like they're insulting me. You understand? So, I find it hard. But somewhere, I've always been this kind of guy that is very understanding. He loves me for who I am. I mean, he has spoken with, I'm saying, two of my boyfriends, I mean, the last one I dated, making the third guy I've ever dated in my life, he had spoken to me too. And just me, he doesn't have any hatred. Like, instead, he encourages me to, like, bro, I can't protect you forever. But all I'm just trying to say is, I hope we get help. You just get the fuck out of this country and go and live your life out there. Because life doesn't get easier. I mean, he has always been the one helping. Even schooling. My schooling, my this, my that. He was there all through. And thanks to his family, they've always been coming through for me. Like, I see them as a family. Yeah, they're doing their part. But at some point, you know, I miss parental care. I miss father love. I'm this kind of guy. I never grew up to have a father figure. Like, my dad is always out there having fun, enjoying his life. You understand? But they have always been there for me. Like, in whichever way, a shoulder to cry on, you know, they've always been helping me in whichever way they can. And I really, really appreciate them. And this is me.
Well, you know, actually, after listening to the story, I am somewhat kind of tearing. But then, you know, I believe there is a light after that tunnel that we all would get to see and meet that day when our glory shall come and victory will be won. Yeah, I want to use this medium to announce to everybody out there that here at Choir City we are beginning a project called the SSMPA and Me. The SSMPA and Me. The project is actually to review the SSMPA, the effects of the SSMPA on personal lives, right? You know, we've long been looking at the SSMPA from the communal view, from the community eye. Now, we want to look at it from personal perspectives. How has the SSMPA been affecting your life, affecting your access to certain societal rights, certain amenities, and so on and so forth. So, want to know how this SMP has been affecting you in person, right? So, if you want, we want your story. We want you to share with us. We accept audio stories and write-ups, no more than 100 words, right? You can forward any one of that to thequercity001@gmail.com. And if you want to partner with us and for sponsorship, you could actually mail us also at thequercity001@gmail.com. We would respond ASAP with Ghana time. And guys, Yellowtide is in town. Yes, Santa, Baba Santa, Santa Claus is in town, right? While you're on that table, my dear, wish everybody happy Christmas, a Merry Christmas, and Happy New Year in advance. Don't spill to your family members that you are the girlfriend while you're on the table. Mm-mm. Right? Once they ask you, what about your girlfriend? Don't tell them you are the girlfriend. I'm not staying. Bye. Bye, Felicia. See you. Peace out.